morning. Welcome into the Locker Room News Radio 610 KONA. Brought to you by Jason Hogue, agent with American Family Insurance, Crazy Moves Casino in Pasco, Coyote Bob's Roadhouse Casino in Kennewick, Philly Rob, Jason Jonas hanging with you this morning. Good Saturday, guys. It is a beautiful first full weekend of baseball, is it not?
Sitting over there in Kennewick, enjoying our, unfortunately, 3-1, which should have been 4-0 Seattle Mariners. I don't care if they were 0-4. It's an amazing weekend. Baseball is back.
He's already got his World Series tickets.
I bought him yesterday, Rob.
Yeah, you did.
he's taking accolade to the World Series.
Well, he is.
He's actually going down to the trophy store and getting his Hall of Fame.
Are you kidding me? I bought him from Dustin Ackley. He was selling him outside
the
Safeco.
Mariner Hall of Fame might be the largest organization in baseball.
By the way, Dustin's watching the 3-1 start from Tacoma, if anybody was wondering. So.
No, great start by the Mariners. They've some of the players that they wanted to get out and hit are hitting this year. The couple guys that are on deals were prove it deals, and they're hitting right now. The defense and the pitching finally in the bullpen kind of finally reared its ugly head yesterday in the loss, but a great start for the Mariners.
The words that Jason said that I want to remind everybody is they are hitting right now. We'll be talking about a new pitching coach here in about 3 weeks, a new batting coach here in about 3 weeks.
We'll dive into the Mariners in just a few minutes. Quite a few things going on sports-wise around town today. Even out of town is the Americans, do or die tonight, game 5 against the Everett Silvertips in the first round of the WHL playoffs. They will be over in Everett. They win tonight. They're back home tomorrow for game 6. If not, it was a nice season. Americans will look forward to next year if they don't get the win tonight. You've got Tri-City Fire in action at the Toyota Center. Their first home game going on tonight. And also going on tonight at Lampson Stadium. And joining us in studio to talk a little bit about that is the general manager of your Tri-Cities Fury. Or Tri-Cities Rage. I'm sorry. I'm I got too many Tri-Cities going through my head. It's the Tri-Cities Rage will be in action tonight at Lampson Stadium, getting primed before the first real game of the season, which will be coming up next month. But the traditional black and white scrimmage going on at Lampson Stadium tonight. Tri-City Rage semi-pro outdoor football, spring football in the Tri-Cities in the beautiful weather, 11-man action. Jessica Navick, the general manager of the Rage, joining us. Talk to us a little bit about tonight's contest and how the team is coming together, beginning its 5th season, if I remember correctly, in the Tri-Cities.
Yeah, so we've been working really hard. A lot of the players and the staff have just been putting in countless hours. All of our staff is volunteers, so there's a huge commitment there, and I'm very proud of some of the things that our staff has been able to accomplish this year. We've been practicing a lot. This opportunity you'll see tonight, this is their first chance on the field playing some competitive. You're going to see them, Coach Cooley and I were saying they're going to be going 110 tonight. Even though they're going to be scrimmaging their own team, they won't lack any effort there. So it's really important for the community to come out and get a good glimpse of what you'll see this season. Our season runs April to July, and this is just going to be your first opportunity to get down there, meet them, meet the staff, and have a good time.
Coach Matt, I want to get you in here for a question quick.
All right.
Now, there are a lot of different semi-pro leagues that exist. I mean, there's tons of them around the country. You guys played in a different league last year.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about the league and the level of competition that you guys are playing in this year, because some people hear the term semi-pro and they think to themselves, it's just a bunch of guys that want to play ball in their spare time or whatever. This is not that at all. You guys are in a league that is seriously competitive. You have to be a top-notch athlete, and you have to be extremely good in order to be able to play at the level of competition at this league. Talk to us about the league you're in.
Yeah, so the league that we're in, it has Spokane, Portland, and a couple of Seattle teams and ourselves right now. The situation is we're such now elite teams that these other semi-pro teams that are trying to come together, we ended up having a game last year where we won 77-7, and so those guys kind of drop out a little bit. But the elite level that we're at right now in the league that we're in, we have Division I athletes. We have guys who have you know, played on practice squads on NFL teams. We have guys who've played Canadian. They've played arena football. Right now, I think we actually have one player playing over in Europe. You know, so the level of competition here is extremely high. You know, you're going to see some extremely good athletes. And what's so special about most of this is for the Rage, a handful of the team is local. So you have your actual local high school boys who won state championships, you know, Kamaik and Richland, Chihuahua, now playing for the Rage. And our goal is, if these kids missed out and they weren't able to go to college or they didn't get the tape and the film, that's what we're here to do, is help these kids get to that next level from college to NFL.
Now, if I remember seeing correctly, you're ranked 10th in the nation.
Correct.
The Tri-Cities Rage is ranked 10th in the nation, not 10th in Washington State, not 10th on the West Coast, 10th in the United States amongst semi-pro football teams. And as we mentioned, there are a ton of leagues out there.
Yep.
So to be number 10 in the country,
hey, we're
pretty
looking,
significant accomplishment.
We're looking for number one.
Of course.
That's what we're going for. And that's what we're doing this year. And that's why we're working so hard. Is 10, we're not satisfied.
So talk to us about tonight's game a little bit. What time is kickoff? How much are tickets? And I'm sure people will be able to just take in the entire experience at Lampson Stadium once they arrive at the gates.
Right. So our kickoff is at 7 o'clock at Lampson Stadium in Kennewick. That's 500 South Dayton Street. Gates open at 6 o'clock. You guys can come in and find a seat. Tickets are $5. There's going to be a little bit of concessions, not the full concession stand you'll see during our regular season games, but we'll have our cheerleaders down there and just a ton of action for you guys to get a glimpse of. And these players are really excited for tonight. You know, this is their first opportunity to show the world what they got. And I'm excited for them to be able to show off their talent. So
now, if anybody wants to find any more information about the team, especially after tonight as we get towards the regular season, where can they go and where can they go to buy tickets?
Right. So there is a gate that they can buy tickets at when you get there tonight. We will also be selling our season passes that are only $50 for all of the games. The special thing about the season passes is that also includes any postseason games. So where those people buying tickets at the gate might have to buy a more expensive ticket, that's the benefit and the beauty of buying a season pass, is you just get into all of those games. So you can find us on Facebook, and that'll take you straight to our website, which is tcrage.com. Or you can find me tonight and ask me any questions you want, any questions about tickets, future game schedule, whatever it may be, I can answer it. So.
And you mentioned the concessions.
Yes.
You guys have a huge change in that as far
we
as
do.
This season goes. Won't
yeah.
you? I mean, look, may as well tell people about it now, because that's certainly a way to get you in the door as far
yeah.
as I'm concerned, is
yeah.
what you guys are doing for concessions this year.
Yeah. So in the past, because of some permits and stuff like that, we've not been able to offer hot food. But we are very fortunate to be working with Dickie's Barbecue, and they will be sponsoring our concession stand. So there's going to be some really tasty food. I had the excitement of eating there 2 weeks ago, and that was my first time eating there, I'll be honest. But it was delicious, and you're going to see other things like Knockerball Tri-Cities out there. We're going to have a face painter. There's going to be tons of halftime activities for the kids to join in and do. It's not just a high school football game. This is a show. This is community. This is players that are wanting to play a sport to still showcase their talent to the community. So we really need everyone's support in getting these guys the attention they need.
First time at Dickie's, Kennewick Dickie's, all-you-can-eat rib eating champion 2018.
That's what I was going to say. You
well.
Jessica, you don't understand. You are sitting around a legend. Now, I'm not going to take long, but I stopped at 12 ribs.
I'm getting the meat sweats just
yeah,
thinking
hang
about
on, absolutely. Rob, will you share with Jessica what the standing record held by one Mr. Philly Rob is? Because what I have to ask is, he's your announcer, and you just announcers Dickies. Do you have enough for everybody
you
else?
Stand in case he doesn't make it back after.
Do you have a Rob reserve for Philly Rob line over there?
We'll probably have to talk about that later.
It was 27 ribs.
It was 27
ribs.
Rob, you may not be the announcer anymore. See, Dan is at home sweating right now, going, "We need extra food."
Well, that does remind me to give you guys a shout out on April 19th at Dickies Barbecue. We will be having our season kickoff party, and we'll we'll be having a rib eating contest. So if you guys have any questions, see our Facebook event there.
Dan Pelfrey,
I don't know that you're going to be allowed to compete.
Dan Pelfrey, if you are listening, bring extra staff. Yeah.
Now, one more question for you guys, and this one for you, Coach Matt. For those people coming out to tonight's game, who are some of the players on the Rage for fans to keep an eye on tonight? Who's going to be flying around on that field tonight, offense and defense?
Oh, wow. Put me on the spot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm the defensive coach. So, really, everybody on defense, you should come out and want to watch. But, really, we have Corey. He is our cornerback. He is about 6'4", 180. The kid is a beast. I call him a human spider. Our linebacking core is phenomenal. We have a defensive end, Zeus Jackson, who actually played for the Fever at one point and now is playing for us. But really, defensively, pretty much everybody. It's going to be really exciting. Offensively, you know, Jordan Kanapik, he's been doing a lot at quarterback. I'm actually really proud of what he's been doing. Running backs, Cody Fraker, you know, he's one of our captains. The kid has just been doing everything possible. You know, he has extreme patience running through the holes, and for some reason, this kid just will not get tackled. He just bounces off like a pinball, and for some reason, ends up finding 6 points in the end zone. So those are the guys that, you know, I'd come out and look at. But just overall, the team is really phenomenal and pretty amazing right now. So come out, and you're going to have a show. Guaranteed, I promise you that.
Kickoff 7 o'clock. Gates open at 6. Tri-Cities Rage, the traditional black and white scrimmage going on tonight. Make sure you get out. Tickets are just $5. And if you like what you see tonight, then make sure you're out there for the opener on April 20th. That is a charity game against Pasco Police and Fire. So it should be an absolute blast. And I think we'll probably be talking about that in the next couple of weeks. We come back, we talk baseball. Season officially underway. More of the Locker Room News Radio 610 KONA after this. Locker Room News Radio 610 KONA. Billy Robb, Jason Jonas. Your call is 547-1610. Brought to you by Crazy Moose Casino, Coyote Bob's Roadhouse Casino, and Jason Hogan's and American Family Insurance. So, guys, let's dive into it. First weekend is underway. Of course, it used to be with Major League Baseball, everything opened on a Sunday, and, you know, things went that way. Now you've got games on Thursday, teams off Friday. Some teams play Friday. But by the way, by the end of tomorrow, the first full weekend of Major League Baseball will be said and done. Mariners off to a 3-1 start. Of course, they played two games in Oakland. They took both those games from the A's. You know, so far, really no surprises. Mariners have started hot the last couple of years. The A's have not started hot the last couple of years. When September rolls around, it's been 180 degrees on both teams. Got a little bit of a glimpse last night of some of the concerns with the Mariner bullpen as the Red Sox come from a 6-2 deficit to overtake the Mariners at the end. Mike Leake will get the start for the Mariners today. Maybe the biggest storyline for the Mariners right now is who the fifth starter is. The fifth starter is Felix Hernandez. Felix is pitching on Monday. He is the number five starter in the rotation, which leads me to the question, why number five is usually not for a ace that has fallen from grace. The five spot is usually from a guy that you think has some potential to climb into the rotation or a guy that you're going to give a shot to, and if he doesn't pan out, you're going to drop him and bring somebody else up. It's not for somebody who has been on the team for over a decade and at one time was your ace. Why not just put him in the bullpen?
Because they're trying to sell seats, Rob. We're not talking about a competitive team. It's very nice that they're 3-1. Should they be? Nah, but they always start hot. Excuse me. Here in a couple months, we're going to be talking about a sub-500 team. Felix will still put butts in the seats. He is still going to bring people out to the King's Court, albeit not as many as he used to. But the Mariners need something. They started that spark with Ichiro, a flashback from the past. And they have 90% of their roster, albeit some of them look really good in the first week, are some nice glimpses into the future, but they have nothing else to sell tickets. I guess the question is, why not?
I mean, I'm with you a little bit here. But I think if you're trying to win baseball games, we've seen the bullpen the last few games. It's not good. And I don't know that Felix can be any good back there. I don't know that. But he seems to pitch when he starts. He's got a few innings in him where he throws okay. And then all of a sudden he has the blow-up inning, whether that's the second inning or the fifth inning. He has the blow-up inning where he gives up five or six runs. He can't get that third out, and he just gets peppered. Excuse me. But with this team, I think that bullpen solidifying it actually would help a lot. If you look at this lineup, if people are playing at their abilities, six of the nine guys in this lineup have had 20 home run seasons. We've had two or three that have had 30 home run seasons. And here in a couple months when Seager comes back, add another one. So that would be seven of the nine guys at the plate. Now, that includes guys like Domingo Santana, Tim Beckham, who had bad years last year, coming off of good years in 2017. Both of those guys are on, you know, kind of prove it deals where they need to hit, and they have hit early in the season. The team is putting up numbers, right? So the thing that scares you about this team is defense. They're not that great defensively. It reared its head with Beckham. He's got two errors already at shortstop. We're four games in. He's already got two errors.
He's got as many errors as he does home runs.
Yeah, but you know, he's got more than that on the home run side. But because he hit two just the other night. But he can hit, and he's always been able to hit. He was a first-round pick a decade ago. He's got a good pedigree. He could play. And then, of course, you've got Encarnacion. You've got Haniger. You've got Jay Bruce, who can still hit a little. Now, are they all going to hit the same days? No. But this team will hit home runs. And you need people in the back end that can shut it down, as you see from yesterday. It wasn't like Strickland is the one who ended up blowing the save. Guerin wasn't great. He walked kind of the bases loaded and had to get a crazy great play, double play to get him out of it. Roscoe gave up the home run. They weren't great in the back end. Any of them were yesterday. So I think the team could benefit a lot. The question is, though, who's number five if it's not Felix?
The big thing is you have Justice Sheffield sitting down there in Tacoma that you know you're going to keep in Tacoma till June for the rules. You also have the other young man that they picked up in the Cano trade. Felix is only a stopgap, guys.
Hoskins.
There is no way that come past. And when's the date, Rob? Is it June or is it July for the service rules that they can bring him
July.
Up? So it's July. So Felix is your stopgap until that date. Once that date hits, I promise Felix will be in the bullpen. Or, I don't know, Seattle has it in him to DFA him, but a couple more games like he showed up in spring training and like what's most likely to come Monday, what do you do with him when Justice comes up?
Well, I think the good thing from yesterday, not to completely change the subject, is I think Kikuchi yesterday, he pitched well against a very good Boston lineup.
Yeah. They'd never seen him.
Yeah, they'd never seen him. And he made a couple mistakes. He gave up two home runs. The other run was unearned because it was off Beckham's error.
Right.
Then they had a doink, you know, hit. Or a stolen base doink hit, and then they got the score. So he pitched really well, got through six against a great Boston lineup that Marco didn't get through as well. You know, 2 days ago. So I think if you want to see some positives, the young hitters are hitting, right? So whether the Mariners trade them for future players next year, or they keep them around, the young hitters are hitting. The pitchers that you want to be decent are pitching well. The defense in the bullpen, which we knew were going to be, you know, negative points to the team, have shown up as well.
Now, going for the Mariners today, one of the 21 players drafted before Mike Trout in the first round, Mike Leake. Yeah, believe it or not, 21 players were drafted before Mike Trout.
Did you say Mike Leake was pitching tonight?
Mike Leake is pitching.
You mean for our 3-2 Seattle Mariners, if Mike Leake is pitching tonight?
Mike Leake is pitching tonight for the Mariners against Eduardo Rodriguez for Boston. It is a 6:10 start time tonight. A little bit of an off time for a game out at T-Mobile Park, formerly known as Safeco Field. 547-1610 if you want to get involved. But, you know, I think ultimately what Jerry DePoto, no matter what happens with this season, I think is a pass. Because he's very active in the offseason. He's looking to rebuild this team. They finally given him the go-ahead to blow it all up and bring it back. You know, things looking pretty good at the beginning. We'll see where things are after the first 62. We'll see, you know, the first benchmark. We'll see where things are at the second benchmark at the All-Star break. And then we'll see where things are going into August. But as we take a quick timeout, when we come back, guys, there is a whole new set of rules in Major League Baseball this year that prevents teams from being able to do significant moves at a point in time where you could make the argument if this rule was in effect before this year, one guy wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, one guy wouldn't have a World Series ring, and one guy maybe never would have made the majors. Take a quick timeout. More of the Locker Room, News Radio 610 KONA. Thanks to Crazy Moose Casino, Coyote Bob's Roadhouse Casino, Jason Hogue, Agent American Family Insurance. If you miss any portion of the show, you can always catch the podcast available at 610KONA.com. Back in the Locker Room, News Radio 610 KONA. Billy Rob, Jason Jonas hanging with you. Thanks to Coyote Bob's Roadhouse Casino, Crazy Moose Casino, Jason Hogue, agent with American Family Insurance, for bringing you the Locker Room each and every week. Guys, biggest change in baseball in a long time was decided this summer by the owners and the Players Association. There will no longer be a waiver trade deadline in baseball. July 31st, that's it, done. No more August moves, no more putting guys on waivers, seeing if they get through, pulling them back, making trades, doing deals. No more. It's July 31st and that's it. Now, some teams thought that the system was being abused. That's why there was this push to get rid of it. But some of the most memorable moves and some significant moves happened during that August deadline that if you go back and you remove that, okay, John Smoltz may never become a Hall of Famer. Because John Smoltz was an August waiver deadline deal sent from as a minor leaguer from the Detroit Tigers to the Atlanta Braves for Doyle Alexander in 1984, which helped the Tigers win the World Series. And then we just all remember what John Smoltz did in the Braves uniform. Justin Verlander, 2 years ago, August waiver deal, goes from the Tigers to the Astros, helps the Astros win a World Series. No ring for Verlander if that doesn't happen.
And that's one of those trades that is pushed this.
Well, it may have, but here's another one to keep in mind. Jose Bautista went to the Blue Jays. Bautista was a minor leaguer. Bautista wasn't cracking the lineup. Bautista got his shot at the majors with the Blue Jays. If you pull that out, Bautista never goes to Toronto. May never get a shot in the major leagues.
Well, Robbie, if you go to a local flair, when the Mariners made their big run, and of course the Edgar double, most people forget Vince Coleman was picked up as a waiver wire deal. They had no speed on the base pass. That was one of their biggest problems. Here comes Vince Coleman to Seattle. Not a big name in that run, but at the same time, he was one of the reasons they got there because he was just absolutely crazy on the base pass. They needed it, and they got it at the waiver wire.
So as the years have gone on, teams have found ways to manipulate the waiver wire. Dump salary, put guys on. The big C word was thrown up, collusion, being able to lob against other teams to prevent them from getting players and so on and so forth. So there's been a little contention about it, but there are still some things that never would have happened in Major League Baseball had that August deal been in place. Now, I like the idea. I think a hard deadline is what it's supposed to be. But, you know, baseball, when it comes to stuff like this, is always kind of operated to the beat of its own drum. And so now it's going to be real interesting come August 1st, when everything's said and done, how many GMs are going to be trying to pick up the phone going, oh, crap, I can't.
Yeah, I mean, I think this definitely helps the integrity of the game, having the deadline at the end of July versus the August one, because really you're picking up players for a month.
Yep.
And you can totally change the fabric of your team. And for those teams that are trying to make those moves for the July deadline, you don't know what you have to do if you've got all these. And again, there's some salary dumps right at the end. Teams were picking up players for nothing. It was I really like the way it is. It's earlier in the season, so we can get teams. It's going to make this trade deadline even better. It's going to make the first one kind of what it is. It'll be done, and now we'll know who's buying, who's selling, who's going to be competitive the rest of the season.
The only thing that I would have liked to have seen, because I think July 31st, the way they had everything set up and structured, knowing you had the month of August to, you know, teams that were in competition or thought they might be a contender had another month to figure out what they wanted to do, if they wanted to, you know, play by this set of rules to get a player instead of just a straight up July 31st mode. I would have liked to have seen them move it 2 weeks later.
Well, I mean, think about last year. Donaldson, McCutchen, Curtis Granderson, all those guys were non-waiver guys.
No, I understand that. But I would like to have seen them move it, because remember, the NFL even moved their trade deadline to week 8. Because how do you know where you're at week 6? I mean, really, can you get an honest assessment of where you are week 6? Since they moved it to week 8, the trade deadline's been a lot more active at the NFL. If they would have split the difference and said maybe August 15th is a deadline, I think that would, and they may do that in the coming years, only because, remember, it's hard to gauge I think it's hard to gauge really truly how much activity you're going to have July 31st, only because of how many guys you would see move in the month of August through that waiver deadline deal. So we'll see how it looks this year. If there's a lot of guys that move July 31st because that's it and that's done, you don't need to move it.
I like July 31st because it's not quite, it's beyond the midpoint of the season, where football 8 is the midpoint, you know, right around the midpoint. I like it where I like the July 31st, because then it gives you have 2 months of baseball with that team, and you just can't pick up random players at the end. And it kind of creates, like you said, it can be manipulated. I like where it's at. If anything, I would advocate that it should be earlier, like closer to the All-Star game, for my liking, because I like to get that stuff and I want to get to the race. I don't want to. Right now, the first part of the season, to me, a lot of it is all about who's going to get traded, who's going to, you know, who are the Mariners going to flip for prospects, especially if you're a team that's not going to make it,
right,
or not going to contend. It becomes all about that, and I like to focus on the season. I don't mind the trade deadline. I don't mind talking about that stuff, but I don't want to talk about it for three quarters of the season. And that seems to be what baseball is a lot of times when you see, you know, people in the media. It's all about who's going to get traded, who's going to get traded, who's going to get traded, and what are they going to get, and what prospects. I like to get to the season, and let's everybody line up and let's play.
547-1610, you want to get involved. Your thoughts on the Mariners' start to the season. They're 3-1. Mike Leake throws tonight for the Mariners as they take on Boston Mariners and the Red Sox, opening up a 4-game series to start the 2019 season with everyone else. Mariners 2 games in the books over in Japan, playing against the Oakland A's. We're going to take a quick timeout. Reminder, Americans hockey tonight in Everett, Game 5. Hams down 3-1 after falling 3-0 in Game 4 at home. They win tonight. They're back for Game 6 tomorrow. They lose, they'll look forward to next season. Tri-Cities Fire in action in the Toyota Center. Tri-Cities Rage in action at Lansom Stadium. Their black-white scrimmage, $5 to get in the door. to catch the Rage at Lampson tonight. We come back, we will talk a little Elite Eight as we will find out who's going to the Final Four. And there's still some rooting interest. Still some rooting interest. Hey, Jimmy Kimmel, if you're listening, yes, they're for real. Back in the locker room, News Radio 610 KONA. Final few minutes on your Saturday morning. Billy Robb, Jason Jonas hanging with you. Thanks to Jason Hogue, agent with American Family Insurance, Coyote Bob's Roadhouse Casino, Crazy Moose Casino. Guys, it's Elite Eight, and you've got three number ones left. Gonzaga, Duke, and
Virginia.
Virginia. They are the three that are left, 2 and 5 in the other bracket, with Auburn pulling off a big upset last night.
Big win by Auburn.
Big win by Auburn. They will take on number two Kentucky in the other Elite Eight contest. Gonzaga's got an interesting matchup today. Texas Tech's not a, I mean, they're playing good basketball. They're surprising a few people. It should be a very good test for Mark Few's team to get them ready for whoever the next opponent is, whether it's Duke. Texas Tech, some similarities with Duke as far as the style of play, which if Gonzaga gets past Texas Tech would be a nice primer, provided that Duke is a winner tomorrow over Michigan State, which would be a heck of a contest.
Let's stop there real quick. Rob, is Duke getting exposed? I mean, these last two games, yes, the Zion Williams show is absolutely amazing. Yes, he's going to be absolutely a pleasure to watch in the pros for a couple years, but do you think Duke really, besides that traveling circus known as Zion, is a team that's, I mean, they've been exposed the last couple times. They literally almost lost twice.
Well, they're just not deep, man. They're just not. They don't have, they play 6-7 players. Cam Reddish, they're probably their second best player, or third, depending on who you talk to. He was out. So, I mean, if you take, and on these college, and if you're only 7 players deep, and you take your second or third best player off the team, you're not going to be as good. Zion is a force of nature.
Amazing.
There's, I mean, and if Reddish gets back, they're as talented starting five as anybody in the country. To beat them, you've got to, I mean, and with the TV timeouts and stuff, they're going to be fine. There's a lot of teams that can beat them, but they're just not very deep. So if Zion, if somebody's not on, they're beatable. They're very beatable.
Man, they sure look beatable the last two games, and I still believe they should have not made it through this last one.
Well, the thing is, against Duke, for me, you don't want to keep it close, because if it's close, Zion can take over in the last few minutes.
Absolutely.
And just bowl his way to the into the lane. They're not going to call a charge. He's going to get the block calls. He's going to get to the rim. You can't stop him. To beat Duke, you're going to have to get out and play quick. Get some, knock down your threes. The teams that can beat them, Gonzaga right now, the Zags are playing awesome.
They look really good.
The Zags, in my opinion, it's the Zags and Auburn are playing the best right now. I give a slight edge to the Zags only because they've got to get through Texas Tech. Texas Tech's got a lottery pick on their squad. Jarrett Culver, 6'5", 6'6", guard. He's going to go in the top 5-10 picks in the draft. Super talented. If they can corral him, they can beat this Texas Tech team, and they can take it all the way. Auburn is too much. They're the most explosive team in my opinion, but they depend a lot on the threes. And if the threes are not dropping, especially when you get to the Final Four and you're in that big dome arena, if the threes are not dropping, Auburn is susceptible to lose.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I'm all for any team in North Carolina losing in the tournament, so you know, go anybody that's playing Duke, which will be Michigan State. That's going to be a heck of a contest.
Two of the best coaches we've seen in our lifetime in college basketball going up against each other. This is going to be an amazing chess match to watch. I mean, Krzyzewski versus Izzo. These pleasurable games.
This is one you're going to need to have the medics. This is going to be a banging of a game.
Absolutely.
Michigan State is going to come out and try to get. They're going to try to get physical with Zion. Everybody else has.
You have to.
And they're going to rough him up. They're going to send a bunch of defenders at him. And
they have the depth and they have the toughness to pull this thing off. And Michigan State's a really, really good team. I have Duke winning it all in my bracket. I think right now, especially with Cam Reddish being not healthy, I would right now, if I had to put money on it, I would have Michigan State winning that game and getting to the Final Four. But I think the game's this afternoon. Gonzaga, Texas Tech is. I think the Zags are going to take that one. But the Virginia Purdue game, that might be. I mean,
what time is that Gonzaga game tip off?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock this afternoon.
The Virginia Purdue game is going to be a typical snoozy, 45-45. You know, Virginia game. Tony Bennett, as most people know, when he was here at Washington State, runs a very deliberate offense. They pass it, they run the shot clock, and then they get a layup. It's going to be, can Purdue force the issue and speed them up a little bit? Purdue's really talented. Virginia's very well coached and very skilled.
Well, it will be interesting to see. I mean, certainly Cougar fans still wish Tony Bennett was in Pullman. He's gone on to great success as the head coach in Virginia. Speaking of WSU, they do have a new head coach. Coming from the San Francisco Dons of the West Coast Conference, a former conference rival of Gonzaga, Kyle Smith will be the new men's basketball coach at Washington State University, announced this week. 6 year, $1.4 million per year. Would have thought that he would have gotten at least $7 million a year to take over that program, because Lord knows he's going to need to be paid well.
Yeah, I mean, well, good luck to him. I think what you're really looking for here is someone who's recruited the West Coast and has connections in California to get players. You know, WSU does a pretty decent job of getting players out of the Seattle area, but then after that, it's kind of a mishmash of who can we get here. This is what you want. You want someone who's got those West Coast connections that can get those second-tier, like West Coast Conference, like a little better than West Coast Conference, get those guys in WSU so they're not going to the other Pac-12 schools.
Okay, however, I look at this and I think to myself, the Dons have done what in recent memory? So apparently he can't get those players to a school in San Francisco to play in the West Coast Conference. And I know you may look at me a little strange, but here's the thing. If you want to improve, I mean, they were 9-7 this year, okay? Or they were 9-7 in conference, 21-10 overall. They got a berth to nowhere. So if you're looking for a guy, but this to me is part of it, okay? If you're going to build a program and you want a program that's going to try and at least rival your football program in interest, you need to bring somebody on board who's somebody who was successful at a lower level, or somebody that can turn around and do something like this. It just looks to me, again, like Washington State is taking a guy, throwing him in, seeing how it works. We'll not pay him a lot of money, and we'll just, make it look like we're trying.
So let me play devil's advocate here real quick. So we went out, WSU went out and got so we had Tony Bennett, right? Tony Bennett was not an amazing recruiter, was a decent recruiter, was an X's and O's guy who could develop a program and develop players.
Tony Bennett was a completely different story.
No, hold on. And then you went out and got, a recruiter. Ernie Kent was a recruiter. He was a guy that at Oregon got good players. They had tons of NBA talent on his team.
Wasn't there somebody in between?
No. Yeah, there was.
Yeah, there was a guy in between.
So now you've got Ernie Kent. And he was a recruiter. He couldn't get the players.
No.
So what you have to do at WSU is find guy that can identify talent, maybe under recruited talent, and get it here and then develop it. This is a guy that, in that conference, that has St. Mary's and Gonzaga, two big bullies in that conference. He's had 63 wins in three seasons, averaging 20 wins. They went to postseason tournaments. In that league, you can't get to the NCAA unless you're beating Gonzaga and St. Mary's year in and year out. That's a tall order. So that's usually a two-bid league. Occasionally they get a third. He's done well in the league. He's above average. He's coached. He's developed players. The reports that I've seen is that he's into the statistics and the metrics of basketball, which helps you with under-talented players. I'm not saying it's a great move, but
this is more the mold of what WSU. You need a teacher. You need somebody who can develop four-year players, and this guy fits that mold.
Okay, to me, you're in the Pac-12. You're in a conference that is down in football and basketball. You have an opportunity that if you can find a guy that has a little bit of name recognition, and I don't mean the fact that Ernie Kent was gone for how long out of the coaching realm before Bill Moos gave his buddy a job to,
but Rob, you're assuming
to not
that
earn
they try.
Money. Hang on a second. But here's what I'm saying is this is a prime opportunity for Washington State to go out and try and find a guy that's going to attract players to come to Pullman to play for him and take an opportunity to increase your standing in a down
conference. This athletic department isn't like oozing with money.
That's right.
This,
but this guy
was kind of hired on the cheap.
Definitely
1.4 for a head coach at a Power 5 conference
is very cheap.
But you're,
I mean,
you guys,
that's not minimum wage cheap, but it's not much higher.
You guys are both assuming that they didn't try to do that. Who do you know who may have turned them down?
It was a quick hire.
We talk about this all the time, Rob. Washington State football was not exactly sexy before Mike Leach got there. Washington State basketball is worse.
I get that, but, this wasn't a long search.
I mean, have you been up there recently, Rob? It's like 40 people in this massive stadium. It's almost bad looking around that stadium. They have to give tickets out just to fill up the bottom row so the TV doesn't look bad. Who's to say they didn't try? I mean, there were some decent names thrown out there, and none of those decent names came up.
Just because they were thrown out there doesn't mean they were part of the search.
That's right.
I think they got the first guy that said yes.
I think I agree with you. So you're assuming that some of the sexier picks weren't in the mix. They probably all told them no.
They weren't even talked to. People like to speculate. That'll do it for the locker room this Saturday. News Radio 610 KONA. Around the House with Eric G is next.